What's up, everybody? Happy Wednesday. Welcome to another episode of the Vile Files. I am here in the comfort of my home, joined by Rochelle, who is also at home.
Hello.
How are you doing, Rochelle?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine, but you know, keep on trucking. But we'll just get right to the action. Great episode today. My dear friend Ben Higgins joins me. I've been meaning to have Ben on for some time. Was hoping to do it in obviously LA where we record live, but obviously Ben doesn't live in LA, and so it's been a challenge. Scheduling wise. So while most things are a struggle due to our isolation, sometimes this has allowed us to get some guests on that are out of town, like Jason before. And so Ben joins us. I hope you guys really enjoyed it. I think it was great to talk to Ben. We talk about a lot of interesting things. Obviously, him and Jess and his new engagement, and
mine
and Ben's relationship.
Were you guys friends in Caitlin's season?
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those things where Ben was always very nice to me, and Ben and I had some really great one-on-one conversations. Uh-huh. Ben was also really close with Sean. I was just the outsider.
Okay.
It was like, it was almost like, you know, for Jared and Ben were very similar, where they're very nice to me and they're just cool guys, but it was almost like they felt like this loyalty to Sean.
Oh.
And therefore it was like, I was the loner, and they never, like, they were very cool with me, but it was more like, it was pretty clear where their loyalties lied in that moment.
Yeah.
You know? And that was just more like they were, in the 12 days that I wasn't there for filming, which is a lot in that world, they just were close with Sean. I mean, Ben lived with Sean. I mean, Ben was roommates with Sean. And so therefore, I felt that the whole time, but I definitely had, like, Ben and I had some great conversations, and it was definitely a foundation for a friendship that, you know, took off after the show.
And were you her, like, you know, what were your feelings when he was named The Bachelor?
I mean, I was supportive of him because, like, I, after Caitlin's season, there was definitely some conversations of me being The Bachelor, mostly based off the fact that I was the 2-time runner up. So I had the story, but it was always Ben, and I was fully aware. Like, I was fully aware of that. Like, it was like if Ben gets hit by a bus, we might make you The Bachelor.
So you were heartbroken.
But, like, I had no, like, delusions that I was really seriously being considered, and so it wasn't like a major disappointment when Ben was selected. So I was happy for him. I thought it was great. Any envy I felt was more like on the obvious of, like, for me at that time, I felt like I had gone through so much bullshit through the past two seasons, and for me it felt like being named The Bachelor would have been like some sort of payoff.
Oh, like you deserved it.
That's how I felt personally. Not that I deserved it, but it was like, God, this all fucking sucked, you know? Like, this was dog shit. And, like, I didn't really do it, especially for Caitlin. I did not go back to be The Bachelor, but after she broke up with me, it was like, well, fuck it, you know? Like, I want something to come from this. There's a little bit of that, but not too much. But
if only you had known at the time, you would have a hit podcast.
Who would have thought? But honestly, like Ben said, like, I'm glad that it happened when I did. I'm way more thankful that I became The Bachelor after Paradise rather than after Caitlin's season. I think that would have, but yeah, I have a great conversation with Ben. I hope you guys enjoy it. As always, thank you for listening. Thanks for sending in your reviews. And thanks for sending your questions for our Ask Nick episodes at castmedia.com. Ask Nick at castmedia.com, cast with a K. If you are tuning in for the first time to check out your lovely Ben Higgins, don't forget to check us out on Mondays for our Ask Nick episodes. People seem to really enjoy it. I hope you guys do too. And either way, we appreciate you listening. So without further ado, Ben Higgins. BetterHelp. I love my BetterHelp. It's such a fantastic tool and an application that our audience has really benefited from, and a lot of my friends have. It's really fantastic. If you've ever questioned or wondered if maybe you could benefit from talking to someone professionally about some of the mental struggles you could be having, whether it's self-esteem, grief, LGBTQ matters, family conflict, anger, sleeping, anxiety, stress, depression, I mean, the list goes on. Ben and I talked about today in this episode, and everyone could, you know, benefit from talking through some of the mental struggles that they have. And BetterHelp helps you do it from the comfort of your home. So now, no better time to do that, to talk to a professional. And maybe you're struggling with being stuck at home, and maybe you've had, unfortunately, some worries about your job or family. I mean, who knows? But BetterHelp is there for you. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/VIALL. Join over 800,000 people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/VIALL. Natural habits, making sure your indoor air is fresh, clean, and safe for your family. If you have ever wondered about essential oils, now is a perfect time to try it. They are perfect to, again, scent your indoor air with a diffuse them. They're great for baths. You can roll them on if you're having a hard time sleeping, you're stressed about life. Essential oils are great for calming. They're great for headaches. Try us out. We specialize in blends, 100% USDA organic. Use code NATURAL for 30% off at nhoils.com. That's code NATURAL, nhoils.com. Make it natural, baby. How's it going, buddy?
I'm doing fantastic, man. It's going really well, actually.
Life should, I guess, I'm assuming, is great for you right now. Obviously, we're in different times. But give us an update. How are you doing?
Congratulations.
Newly engaged.
Thank you.
Congrats.
Thank you. Do you want the honest update, or do you want me to sugarcoat this at all?
No, Ben, I don't like sugarcoating at all. Yeah. You know me. Come on. I want the raw. If you're fighting already, I want to hear about it. You know?
Yeah, definitely. Well, let me tell you everything. First off, I got to just like give the quick disclaimer that I am recording this inside of Jessica's parents' house, and there is 7 other people. So her parents, her 2 siblings. So listen to this. I'll answer your question, but here's the setup of my life right now, and it's been actually fantastic. So they live in Franklin, Tennessee. I started out in Warsaw, Indiana with my parents because that's where I flew home from the tour to. Jessica came and got me, and we drove down here about 3 weeks ago. Her older brother and his wife are house hunting in Nashville, so they're living at her parents' house right now. Her other brother is a professional baseball player, and so they obviously had to get sent home. So he came back home, and then Jessica and I are here. So literally there's 7 of us in this house, and it's been awesome. Especially for the engagement piece. And so, Jessica and I are doing fantastic. It is the coolest thing. It is the best thing. It is the most peaceful thing. I think the most unique identifier of how I'm feeling when it comes to my engagement is just super peaceful. Like, that doesn't happen very much in my life. I don't feel a lot of like peace when it comes to most things. And so I'm very peaceful, very excited, super happy. Definitely happy that it happened. It was like months in the planning, and then all the plans got changed last minute. And so I'm glad that is in a sense over with, so we can like not have that looming over us anymore. Here's the bad part about my life right now is over the last 3 years, I've invested and bought 3 restaurants and 2 coffee shops. Oh. Those things are doing really bad right now.
I know we text a little bit, and I am very sorry to hear that.
Yeah, so like the benefit of life for me is realizing that if I lose everything, I'm still okay. Like, meaning that my identity does not lie in what I have. The sad part of that is I've tried to work hard and often so that I could do those things, so that later on in life I could have the freedom and the time to invest in my family and friends. That part is sad. I don't know what this looks like in 6 months for me when it comes to those investments. But with all that being said, is then I have this engagement and this partner who looks at me and looks past all of those things, knowing that like there's a lot of fear right now with what's happening. It just says like, well, we'll make it work no matter what. And so like overall good, but behind the scenes, like it isn't uncommon for me to go, holy crap, I might lose everything.
Totally. So I am curious because we text a little bit, but I mean, this is an interesting topic just because there's a lot of people dealing with this right now. Mm-hmm. Restaurants, bartenders, waiters, anyone in the kind of service industry are people who are hit very hard about this. And how does, I mean, what's the landscape look like in terms of, you know, do you have the option to kind of put the pause button on and hope that when things get going, you can run business, run your business and keep it going? And what's your biggest risk in terms of, let's say this goes on for, you know, 4 or 5 months, maybe you even have like a break even date, but like, mm-hmm. what's at risk in terms of a guarantee that like, we'll just pick it up when things get back to normal. Is it just like the rent or what's, how's that all work?
Well, to not bore the listeners, I'll go over like a quick, cause it is somewhat interesting to go behind the scenes a little bit. And so obviously the government like PPP loans have helped. The idea that we can get small business loans to support our business and our payroll is helpful. The other side of this is I was on tour when we found out that there was going to be a shutdown, and the entertainment industry, like the cruise setup and teardown industry, is very similar to the restaurant industry when it comes to your cooks and your people that are hostessing and waiters and waitresses. There is a side of this that I've been able to see on both sides, and it's been honestly really sad. You know, I spent a lot of my life kind of trying to figure out how to combat poverty and crisis, and I had never seen it really in the U.S. Quite honestly, I'd seen homelessness and stuff, but I'd never seen people's lives get rocked. And when you get told, hey, you live in New York City and L.A., and your job that you have counted on is going to be gone, and we can't pay you, and I mean that for both the entertainment industry and restaurants, it's really scary. And so then your mindset as an owner goes to, well, how are you going to support these people? Again, the loans help. Beyond all of that, you had to get creative. So we are doing pickup and delivery. I do have 3 restaurants that I'm a part of, but there's 10 restaurants in total. We've consolidated all of our restaurants down to one building. And so we're doing pickup and delivery out of one building. So we're sharing resources and staff. And then we're using one of our other buildings right now. This is crazy. This will blow your mind. And I say all this because I think it's really interesting. And I can take no credit for this. We have had an incredible team of people that have led this effort. 3 hospitality groups in Denver have now joined together, shared resources, shared staff, shared finances, and are feeding 5,000 people a day right now for $6 a piece meals out of one of our buildings to keep people who are hurting and unfortunately suffering with food. So I would say, with all that being said, there's been new strategies in place to keep people fed, to keep them healthy, to keep them feeling supported, because they are. The side of that, from a business sense, is we've built in levers now that I've never had to build in before. So say we were meeting 60% of estimated sales. Well, then there's a lever I pull and it says, hey, I have to fire myself, or I have to decrease funds by this much for myself. Or, hey, a next lever is, hey, I have to lay off the staff. And then the next lever is, hey, I've got to close down the buildings and the businesses and pretty much go out and start hunting for either new capital to infuse into, just to keep it open if people want to believe in me and believe in us, or I have to close the doors. So I've pulled all 3 levers with different businesses so far. Some are going to be fine. I was talking to Jess earlier. I think one of my coffee shops is really going to have a hard time getting back and going again. But again, it's impossible. I mean, if you talk to some of the smartest minds out there, like senators are meeting with us right now as a hospitality group going, what kind of stuff can we put in place to help you all? Like, nobody knows what's going to happen next. Like, nobody knows how this shakes out. And that's the scary part. And we're just trying to figure out how to make it work. So that's kind of how we've done it, is there's just different levers at different times.
Well, I appreciate you sharing with that. I think it is interesting for our audience. And there's a lot of people impacted by this particular, you know, this industry. And there's a lot of people who listen who are bartenders and waiters and in the restaurant business. So it is very relatable. And I certainly wish you the best. That the thing you're doing with getting people meals, is that something you can plug, or can you direct people who are in the Colorado area or Indiana? Where can people find this and benefit from it? And how can people support it if they want to try to do that as well?
Yeah, so definitely. So you can go to my Instagram and see a link for it, but it's the Colorado Restaurant Rescue is the kind of the pop-up that happened from this. You can donate to that. I'll be honest right now, with the help of the Boston Consulting Group, because they're one of our partners and a few other, we've raised enough money to do this for about 6 weeks. And so I'm hoping at 6 weeks, the need is no longer there. If it is, I think we're going to have to even get more creative on what we're doing. Here's my call to action is, all it took was three privileged businesses to go out and say, hey, we all are fighting this. We all know there's a need. We're better together than we are alone. Can we start doing this together and figure out how to help? And my call to action is, you can do that in your own community. It doesn't take Denver, you know. There are people that right now that I know that you know are struggling. Again, everybody's been affected. So start going to do something like that. It's crazy to think that people who 6 weeks ago who were working a really stable job no longer have any income coming in, and that fear and that like heaviness on their heart has to be helped, and we can only do it if we join together to do it. So yeah, you can help me out. That'd be awesome. I have a couple other things I can plug throughout the podcast. I'm sure we'll talk about ways to help, but the biggest way right now is just going to do some stuff on your own too.
Ben, how long have you been in philanthropy? You've always you're always a very impressive person, even from the moment I met you. But you've been doing this for so long. I mean, what made you passionate about it? How'd you get into it?
You know, it's interesting, Nick. I think selfishly, there was this like I always wanted to have a seat at the table. Meaning, like, I always wanted to be invited in to be a part of something. And then selfishly, I always wanted to feel like what I was doing mattered. And so I think my philanthropy started in a selfish desire to feel like I was making a difference. And I feel like that's an okay place to start, especially before I was educated on what the true injustice that we see out there that we were fighting. And so I got into this when I was 15 years old. A quick story was I went to Honduras for the first time and I saw true poverty, like starvation, lack of water, lack of healthcare. No healthcare, really. No education. No access to any city. No access to any air conditioning. No access to any necessities or any things that we enjoy in luxury in life. And I left that, and my worldview was rocked. As a believer in Jesus and a God that loves and cares, I saw this, and I said, "No way, these two things can relate." And it messed me up to the point where I needed to pursue either giving up all hope and all faith that there was something greater than ourselves, or figuring out how those two things, when it comes to extreme injustice and a God that loves, how those two things align. And luckily for me, I guess now, is those two things over a lot of wrestling have aligned in my life. And now that's why I do it, because I believe it matters. I just believe now that there's a purpose to it, even if my intentions originally were wrong. And so really, since I was 15, I've been on the path. And now that I'm 31, it's now something I can actually do. And then you have a platform handed to you from a show, and the impact is greater. I laugh often. I say, I really have been a part of this kind of stuff for a while. It's just funny that I have to go on a reality television show for people to want to listen. So like, that's true for me, is now I have a platform handed to me and now people listen, and now my impact can be great. And I don't take that lightly, but I really enjoy it.
Yeah. You've always been a great role model, even to me. It has been fantastic. I mean, you've always been an inspiration, and I don't mean that lightly. I don't compliment easily, but you've always been great that way. So I appreciate you putting that out there, and continue to be even a role model to me. And it's funny when you talk about the show, and I know you and I have talked about this offline, but you know, it's like even when we text back and forth, and when we get together once in a while, we kind of always have these moments where we reflect back on kind of the pros and cons of the show, right? Mm-hmm. That have impacted our lives. The platform we've been given, right? And the opportunity to do the things that you just talked about. But then we also kind of talk about like the mental anguish we've kind of endured, both from, you know, just being on the show and our personalities. And it's kind of funny because I know people look at you as kind of this very polished person and very put together and this charmed life, but you know, you're an example of someone who, like everyone else, has their own insecurities and struggles. And it's just always kind of, it's always kind of funny when you, even for me, sometimes I will, you know, like I'll look at you when we talk and like, I sometimes will even be envious of you. I'll even have jealousy of you in terms of like comparing your time on the show or my time on the show. And it's just, it's always kind of like every time I talk to you, it's sometimes a great reminder, a humbling experience that everyone has their own problems. And I was wondering if you could just kind of share that with, you know, a little bit in terms of, you know, some of the things that you talk about and struggle with, and despite all the things that you're doing, you know, we all have our struggles.
Yeah, that's you make a great point. And it, you have always been a unique outlet to talk about those things with. It takes it takes comfort, safety, and a big person to be able to sit across the table and say, yeah, like I struggle. Like that doesn't happen, I don't think, very often in life. And typically in my life, it either happens with my therapist or like Jessica. It's not a common conversation. But one of the things that, you know, we talk about often is the envy piece. Like, gosh, like it is a weakness of mine. And I don't say weakness in terms of like this is my weak, like my problem, and I take it lightly. No, like envy is a constant battle with me. I am envious all the time. I have to battle, like my mind can go to some pretty dark places, especially when I'm living in the midst of envy. Like if I look on my Instagram and I see somebody thriving, I would hate for the world to see some of the thoughts that go through my head. It is ugly. It is disgusting. It is bad. And the truth of it is I've acted on that envy at one point, some points, and it never ends well. And so I think I've just learned.
Do you remember an example?
I think mostly dismissing people. I think mostly, just seeing something on social media and dismissing them as a person, or dismissing their happiness, or saying, I wish they weren't happy. And then I meet them in person. I sit across the table from them and I hear their story. And I'm like, no, Ben, how wrong you were to assume that everything was perfect. Or if it was perfect, how about you start celebrating the fact that for the first time in maybe years, they're happy and they're finding joy in life. Like, how cruel do you have to be? Specific examples, mostly, honestly, I probably try to block out because I'm embarrassed of them. But I think that is one thing. And I could go on and on and on about how envy's affected me. But from lessons learned in my life and how wrong I've been so often, I know that my first response to envy now is to try to find a way to get rid of it, because acting on it or pursuing it has never been healthy or helpful for me. So the second thing is, and I don't know, I mean, it's better than the opposite, I would say. But I don't know the exact reasoning for why people assume like perfection in me. I mean, the show doesn't help me, right? The tagline was the perfect Ben. That's great, but it definitely sets you up.
It's
for
better
failure.
It's better than fourth time's a charm, Ben.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm not mad about it, but it is, you know, it is, Nick, like this interesting thing where like, I'm glad that people presume like polishedness, I guess. But I also struggle with that because like, it's not who I am. It's not who I want to be. It's hard on me to keep up with. And if I try to keep up with it, it feels fake because it's not me. It never has been.
How long do you feel like you were trying to keep up with it from when you were on Caitlin's season, and most specifically, you know, when you were The Bachelor? Because I, you know, the expectation, you know, Caitlin's season, it was just like everyone loved you, you were great, and then they kind of gave you the expectation of being perfect, and then, you know, it's, we all hear, you know, praise and criticism from fans, and both, I'm a big believer that the praise actually hurts you more in the long run than criticism. But do you feel like you, for a long time, were trying to live up to those expectations?
I mean, I think yes. And I think I still do, in a sense of, again, if we go back to like what we started with here, it's assuming that every person's story matters. And so if I go into every conversation and every interaction with the curiosity of, hey, I just want to hear who you are and I want to respond to who you are, then people are going to go like leave that going, oh, wow, he's a nice guy, or hey, he cares, or you know, whatever other words you want to throw to that. That's great. And I hope to always keep that up, and I hope to always have that, you know, desire. The second thing of that is, I remember the moment where I said, screw it. Like, I know what it, like what I want to be doing, and I'm going to pursue it passionately. One of that is after a breakup, you kind of like throw everything out and you're like, screw it, I'm just going to do what I want to do now. And that's when, you know, Generous Coffee started, and it's where I left my software job and I took some risks in life. And I said, I'm just going to go do this thing and see where it takes me. I'm going to be a rebel without a cause. The second is when I posted, you like that? It's not how
a rebel without a cause is opening a coffee shop. That's awesome.
I was in Honduras. And I took a picture in a community, and we were raising money to develop a pig project. We were going to raise pigs, sell pigs for women to have jobs in this community. I get that that is a little controversial for some. I don't, but I posted about this, and the response was incredibly negative. Because people didn't like the idea that pigs were going to be sold to for slaughter. And people didn't understand the depravity and the poverty that existed within Honduras, and how crucial this kind of work is to keep them fed, and to keep them having any job at all. And I remember at that time being really pissed off, because I was like, you have like wanting to yell at everybody that was commenting, like, you have no idea what you're talking about, because they really did it and they still didn't. And the second is, hey, I have prayed through this, meditated through this. I know that jobs for women in these communities is right. And I know this is one of the only options to provide that. We've weighed the pros and the cons. And I believe this is the right thing. And so I'm going to stop worrying so much about, you know, maybe getting everybody on my team for the common good, and saying, I'm going to try my best, even though I know I'm going to mess up, to pursue the right thing the best I know how. And so that's when I gave up, you know, really worrying about the public opinion. It's still a lens that I process things through. Like, if somebody calls me boring and, you know, bland, like, I get it. I get why you're saying that. I understand that about myself. I'll process that, but it's not going to affect me maybe like it used to.
Does that, I mean, it's funny. So the, and we've talked about this, when people will comment, oh, Ben's boring, does that bothers you?
Oh, I mean, yes. It still bothers me today. Like, especially if it's somebody that I love and care about and that knows me, like, they, you know, sometimes you have a friend that says something that they don't even know they're saying.
You have friends say this to you?
Yeah, you definitely, like, some of the hardest things have been when friends say things to you about your show or about you as a person, or maybe you did an interview, or, you know, maybe, for example, I've been in LA and not Denver for too long, and I come back and a friend throws a jab at me about that, like, how I've been gone and how it's finally catching up with me. Like, that stuff hurts.
It's just like, oh, you're different, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's... Yeah, it takes a certain person to say that to you, but you're right. There are certain people you're just like, I get very defensive about stuff like that.
Definitely. And it stings. The initial blow hurts. And I'm trying to develop the skill set to process it through a lens and take a deep breath. And obviously having Jessica in my life helps, because then I can call her and be like, this person said this. Is it true? Is it not? Or I can call my parents and process it through them.
Yeah.
People that I know have my best interests. And typically, you know, we come out on the other side just fine. But yeah, it does hurt. Still hurts. It has not stopped hurting.
I mean, you're a multiple business owner. You're in Honduras. You're like on tour. I don't see how that's boring, but I guess that's just me. Very non-boring life.
We all have our scars. It was funny. I remember being in Vegas with you, and like it was back to back, and it was... It was nice to see it happen to you, because like I get we talked about envy. Like, I get envious of you all the time. I mean, I have multiple times been on a phone with a Bachelor producer, and you know, who knows what the context is or what the conversation is, but I've said multiple times, it's just like, I know I'm not fucking Ben Higgins, but like, what the fuck? You know, like, I'll be like bitching about something, and like usually it's out of context, but there's often this like jealousy or envy, and it's usually in my own head because I have a great relationship with them, about like this, you know, how everyone loves Ben, you know, and like when I'm at my weakest or I'm at my most vulnerable, like I'll like, you're like this, like I love you, but sometimes you're my own demons punching back for being like, well, I know I can't, like, I know I'm not Ben, like what the f-, you know, and I do it all the time.
Isn't it weird how that happens though? Because it's not like you and I have had a disagreement or a contentious moment in our friendship, and it's not like there hasn't been space for the both of us, but you know, let's use you and I as an example, and then also expand that to, that still happens today with people that are on the show, or maybe not even on the show, but like maybe they've gotten a gig that I've wanted or something like that. Yeah. And like when I'm at my weakest or I'm hurt, like that is a response that I have. And it, and if you break it all down, you come from like the view looking up top. It's like, well, why? Like, what are we trying to do there? Like, ultimately, Nick, I don't want to see you suffer. I know you don't want to see me suffer. We want to see each other do well. But yet there is that pull to like also have a lot of envy and saying, why can't it be me? Or why can't I be that?
Yeah, no, totally. And it's,
I don't know why. I wish it was easier to explain.
It's ego. I mean, we're all a victims of our own ego. And I think it's nice to hear you being open about it, just because of how people do perceive you, right? And in a positive way. But, you know, we have these moments of weaknesses. And again, I remember being in Vegas, and it was like, and it'll happen to me. And like, what will happen is like when a fan comes up to me, and for whatever reason, when they try to relate to me, it's like they want me to know that they're a fan. And the way they do this is by like, and they don't mean to, by criticizing me, but they'll be like, I never hated you. I know a lot of people hate you, but I like you. And then I witnessed like moments later, some fan going up to you and saying, I never thought you were boring. Like, I've always thought you were great. And that was like, it's like you, like, and then like you, I saw the look on your face, and it was like the same feeling I have, where it was like, why do you got to say that to me? Because all I'm thinking about is, wait, I didn't think people still hated me. Or you're like, I didn't think people thought I was boring yet. You know, like, and it's just funny how it scratches at the like the scab or the scar or whatever, but it really does.
Whatever,
yeah,
you're not wrong, Nick. I mean, that is a common, that is not an unfamiliar feeling. If you want to hurt me, I've always told everybody it's pretty easy. Like I'm not superhuman. You could hurt me pretty easy, pretty good. And because of this experience, I've allowed a lot of people, millions of people, the ability to hurt me with just a few words if they wanted. But with that, I've also gained some strength and some callus and confidence that it's not going to crush me. But hey, for anybody out there listening, you can still hurt me if that is what you're wanting to do during this time.
Is that what you want to do? Yeah, but I think it's just more important to remember that, like, that's kind of everybody, right? Like, you know, even your best friends or your spouse or whatever, or... And I think that's when we struggle with the most, is when we are honest with ourselves and having these feelings about people. You're like, why do I feel this way? You know, because like you said, it's not that you don't have an animosity toward this person. You love this person. You like them. You wish them success. And sometimes our own egos, our selfishness, our insecurities will bring out kind of the worst, as you say, desires that makes us like almost feel dirty inside for even thinking about it, let alone saying it.
Yeah, no, you're right. And here to, you know, to finish your point, there is one of the things that as I talked about, like lessons in life when I've envied, oftentimes when say, Nick, you would land a gig that I really wish I would have had that I was up for, and they give it to you. And I sit at home and I'm mad and I'm angry and I'm sad and I'm coming up with 1,000 excuses. And then you get the gig and I see either one, how well it fit you and how bad it would have felt fit me. And I say this as an example of kind of life and like, so
no, same. I mean, and it works both ways with you.
What kind of gig and then, did he get that you wanted?
I mean, you know, Nick is out there often. I told him this last time I saw him. I was like, man, I text him every once in a while. I was like, it feels like you're thriving. And here, you know, there's moments like I texted him at one point. I was on a tour bus driving through like, you know, some godforsaken town that nobody ever visits, and I'm you know, performing to an audience of people that I'll never see again. And it's like, man, it feels like you're thriving and I'm living on a tour bus and like I haven't slept in 2 weeks. So like that, you know, that is a thing. And then, or the other side of that is you see, you maybe see that like how your life was better because you didn't get the gig, or maybe you didn't get the opportunity and how it opened up you for new opportunities. And, say all this to say life makes sense over time. And if we step in every time we feel envious, thinking we know best, we're going to quickly be wrong. And I'm starting to try to get better at that.
Yeah, that's a great point in terms of the, you know, the cliche line of unanswered prayers or things like that, letting things work themselves out. But you're right. I mean, and you're right. Like they're even. Even the Bachelor Live show, for example, like there was definitely some envy. I mean, the truth is, I don't know if I would have wanted it or liked it. But what bothered me is like, I wasn't even asked or, you get asked. But it was just like, you want to be wanted. It's just, it's so petty that we have these feelings sometimes. And you're right. Like, then you realize like, no, that does make sense. He's really good at that. Like he thrives in that atmosphere. And then it's, you know, the grass is always greener. It's just, it's sometimes nice to talk about it and share it and put it out there. I think just because everyone has these feelings and it's, I will say like, I don't know, let me ask you this. Like when you hear something from me saying, oh man, like that really bothered me. Like when you are vulnerable with me and you tell me that you are struggling, I feel bad, but it makes me feel better because it makes me feel like I'm not alone.
No, that's it. You just said it. Like, I think when vulnerability exists, I'm believing in the last year that that our true connection point as people is shared pains. Like we've all had a pain or a disappointment. So when you share a pain with me, I believe I can connect with you and enjoy you more than if you just continue to brag about to me about how many great things you're doing in life. Because one, I'll probably believe that you're thriving and I'll be like, look at my own life and be like, I mean, I feel like I'm doing all right. Like I feel like I'm good. You know, I'm engaged. I'm super happy about that. Life is full of so much joy. I'm unemployed, like the tour that I was doing no longer exists. So I'm
you
now
still have a podcast.
I still have a podcast. But yeah, when we share our vulnerabilities and pains and insecurities, I almost think it might be impossible if you're a decent human to look across the table and not say, I feel a little bit better because I've just realized how wrong I was. And now there's freedom in knowing that I'm not alone. And there's freedom in knowing that we're all in this together. And there's freedom in knowing that I'm not missing the mark by not feeling completely at peace or completely on top all the time.
Yeah. Well,
you're right.
Thank you for sharing about that. Have you talked much about what you were going to do with Jess from a proposal standpoint? I don't want to be too redundant, but have you, like, how did you have to pivot and what was the plan that you were going to do?
Dude, it's wild. I've talked a little bit about it, not much, and she doesn't know all of it. And so there's some secrets because I do want to recreate it at some point in our life.
Okay, fair enough.
But
just postponing it and doing it later?
Kind of. But here's the truth of it is how long are we going to be in isolation for? And so like I had asked her father's blessing in December. Jess did know that. She knew that I was doing that. And then I stopped all intentional conversations with her on purpose from December until whenever the proposal was because I wanted her to be surprised. I wanted her to be a little thrown off and shocked. Well, it was getting long enough that I think she was like, I'm supposed to be moving to Denver at some point this year. I don't know when. My lease is up at my house. I'm moving in with my parents now for indefinite amount of time. Ben hasn't talked to me about what our future looks like in 3 to 4 months. I'm now confused about that. And so I knew that I was not doing her any favors by keeping it going. Like it was starting to feel almost like I was manipulating my partner who like that. And like, that wasn't a fun feeling, especially when you love them. So I, in March 21st, was going to propose to her when we were in New York City for the tour. I had a big thing planned. It was going to be really beautiful. Her family is all from the East Coast. So her cousins and her grandmother were going to be around in the next few days. And then obviously the tour got canceled. And so right away I called her mom and I called my mom and I said, hey, we're obviously going to have to pivot. What do you think? And it just so happens to be that her family lives in a beautiful house here in Franklin, Tennessee, and it has a pond in the backyard. And her mom's like, well, let's just decorate it with sunflowers. It's going to be isolated. You know, there's not going to be people around. We can be have a safe environment. Let's just do it there. So quite frankly, it ended up better because her brothers were able to be there, which they weren't going to be there in New York City. And she loves her brothers dearly and her sister-in-law. So the original plan was New York City. That's about as far as I've talked. It was 2 months of planning this proposal, just to let you know of what kind of detail went into this. Yeah, it was going to be a big deal. Instead, we just did it in the backyard, and that's even better.
I kind of, that's just me. I like that. I mean, I'm not a planner at all. So the fact that you spent 2 months planning something both gives me anxiety and envy that you can do that. But I love the simplicity of a being, you know, with the family and spur of the moment. And certainly, I'm guessing, doesn't take away from the excitement that I'm sure you both shared.
It definitely didn't. If anything, it added to it because we walked right inside afterwards, and her brother is a great chef, and he cooked a huge dinner. And we opened up bottles of wine, and we celebrated, and we laughed with family, and we shared old like pictures of Jess. And it took, if anything, it added to it. Like we went to bed that night, and I said this was as good as anything I could have ever planned.
Aw.
What's so. Obviously with the current times, again, there's still a lot of unknown, certainly when it comes to weddings and get-togethers, but
yeah.
Despite that, do you guys expect to have a longer engagement? Are you guys anxious to tie the knot? Where are you guys with that?
It's funny. The only other person that really asked me this is Harrison. And I can't remember if we did it like on one of his little chats or if he just did it as a friend, but I was like, I want to be clear here. Like, this is not a bachelor engagement. Like, we are engaged to pursue marriage and like start planning a wedding immediately. So like, that's the
married in a decade.
Yeah. let's be clear there. The second is, I think ideally we would have had a short engagement. I think it is unwise of us, and we're kind of discussing this right now. Like today, I'm supposed to come to the table with my pros and my must-haves for the wedding, like things I need and desire, and she's going to do the same. We're also supposed to come to the table with our guest list today. I have a feeling it's going to be a longer engagement, and here's why. One, as you mentioned, we don't know what this virus is going to affect. Like it could be here another 2 months. 2.5 months. At that point, weddings are going to be pushed back. Venues are going to be booked. And I don't want to add stress to a really fun and joyful time, knowing that this is the real deal. The second is, as I mentioned before, her brother plays professional baseball. So there's a very short season of like freedom that he isn't playing that we can get married. And so it's kind of managing and navigating, well, when does his season start up? If it starts up end of August and it goes into the end of the year, well, then is it a spring wedding? Well, what if we're back on tour at that time? Like, I don't know. We don't know yet, but we're trying to figure it out. But it's almost impossible to figure it out when we're being told, hey, it might be locked down till June.
Like, could you imagine yourselves kind of eloping, at least with like your parents, her family, her brothers, and just like get married and then have the celebration with friends and the big ceremony later, just because it's like, hey, I want to marry you now or whenever you guys are actually ready. What are your thoughts on that? Yeah.
Well, it's why we're coming to the table. That was part of our conversation. And so we kept going in circles about this because we both were like, yeah, we could definitely see it, but what are we giving up to do that? And so that's why we said, okay, let's separate. Write down our must-haves for a wedding and see if an elopement or whatever you call it could work. I could see that, and then having a big celebration with everybody later. I mean, that could be fun and exciting, and a lot less stress. But then again, like at the end of all of this, this is Jess's day. Like this is our day as a couple. But like, I want to make sure that she has the wedding she's always dreamed of and that she feels celebrated. You know, the hard part about being engaged during isolation is that she hasn't seen any of her friends. So I don't know this, but like it feels almost like hey, we got engaged and I don't know if my fiance feels as celebrated as I know people feel for her because she hasn't had any human contact with anybody. And like Zoom's great, but it's a little bit of a disconnect. And so, yes, I could see it being a possibility. I don't know if that will be the case. I wouldn't be shocked, but I also wouldn't assume that that will happen.
Sure. I mean, I don't know Jess that well. I've only hung out with her over a weekend and she's lovely, but she doesn't strike me as someone who would put all that much emphasis on those things, especially since they're out of her control, you know, in terms of like feeling engaged would probably mostly come from the proposal that she got from you, because let's be honest, there's a lot of people who are like that, where like the feeling of an engagement has a lot to do with people's excitement or response to you being engaged, or the size of the ring, or the size of the, like all these material things that kind of go into. And quite frankly, a lot of people get caught up in that whole kind of ceremony and process. And then all of a sudden when you're married and that's all over, it's kind of almost like filming a reality TV show where like the hype and the drama, like that all goes away. And now you're just like, well, now you're together. And it's all over. And I think sometimes when people get caught too much up in the theatrics of the engagement, the proposal, the ring, the ceremony, et cetera, it loses a little bit of spunk when it's all said and done. And yeah, I didn't mean, I get that it's enjoyable, but just doesn't strike me as someone who would get caught up in all that.
She doesn't. No, she's, I mean, it's not affected her negatively at all. I just really want her, when it comes to the wedding, to be able to have her wedding. Like, if she dreamed of looking out and seeing all 56 of her cousins, which is like something she has there.
She has 56 cousins? Or
she's an Italian. No, so our wedding, or our Christmas this year that I went to, I think had like 56 or 60 total people, and they were all like first cousins. Like, it's wild, dude. It's something. I mean, I don't have any brothers or sisters, and like my family's super small, so... I mean, if she desires that and wants that in her life, like, I want to be able to give that to her. And then it's like, okay, how do we get there? I will tell you this. Here is like a really good way is I know people right now. I just have a friend that had to cancel their wedding, and it was a $50,000 wedding, and they got nothing back from it. So not a dime. I know more people that are having to pause and push back their weddings than ever before. Like, I don't think this is a time to add extra stress to a really great thing.
I like
and
that.
It feels like it is. Yeah.
And I just want to say, I appreciated the wedding announcement, because it's like something fun and normal. Everything else feels awful. That it's like nice to have these like little celebrations of good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was really happy when you sent me, I got a text from Ben in the morning, and you know what? I didn't feel any envy. And
that's healthy.
You know, I felt good about that. It was a little bit of like, fuck, man, really? God, it's just like, there was comfort in you being single for a while. And again, it's mostly because like, I don't have a problem with me being single. I really don't. I'd like to meet someone. I like when you get annoyed about the boredom comments, it's like, I do feel this pressure to be in a relationship and what it looks like, this perception of being single. I've talked about this before. Like, I'm not as single as I look. I just don't, you know, give day by day, like, descriptions of, like, my love life, right? It's not like I'm roaming life, like, haven't, like, had any communications with women. It's just I haven't, you know, found my person yet. But, there was, like, there wasn't a lot of envy. And I honestly thought to myself, there would be, just because there's a connection that you and I have as former leads, and the expectations of being in a relationship. It's kind of nuts that way. But I was very happy to hear that you guys got that, and it was a delightful text that I woke up to.
Well, and you have a lot of listeners to this podcast. I'm sure there's somebody out there right now that's probably like a therapist or a counselor. They're going, Ben and Nick, here's your problem. It's very clear. Like, you know, you both have been a part of a shared thing. You both have very similar interests. You both are trying your best to make the most of an opportunity that had been handed to you. This is why, you know, that feeling of like, gosh, dang it, I'm not as good or doing as well as the other person. The truth is like we both have really great things going, and we both are romantically, we're both maybe in different seasons, but at the same time, like there's positives to being single, and there's really, I hope, positives to being engaged and married. I don't know that yet, but I'm assuming that. That's why I'm making this choice and walking into this. And if we start looking at it from more of the side of like, hey, I don't want to see Nick like fall off. Like that would be terrible. We've had that happen to our friends that we know from the show that we've probably felt envy for at some moment. And all of a sudden, like they've fallen off and it crushes the soul. Like it's not ever fulfilling when we see somebody else struggle. So, I mean, I get it. Like, I don't think you're off. Like I feel that same way. But I'm starting to believe there's room for all of us.
Yeah, totally. What's one thing that you and Jess, not necessarily fight about, but where your personalities don't mesh as much as you would like to, and something that you feel like you guys are going to have to be conscious of as you move into a more committed relationship, especially as, you know, the pressures of like having kids or mm-hmm. dealing with financial struggles or just anything like in terms of conflict that you guys have had to face?
Yeah, the first one that comes to mind is that her hair sheds so much. it's ridiculous. Like I have shared a shower with her right now. She has a bedroom upstairs at her parents' house. I'm in the downstairs, but there's a big bathroom downstairs, so she uses it, and like the drain is constantly clogged. That's a big struggle. I got to figure that out. I came to the solution there. It's two separate bathrooms. The real like heavy thing, the meaningful thing is we recognize this in each other right away. So we both confidently, based on our experiences in life, believe in Jesus and believe that Jesus exists and is real and is active. And so we'll go to church together. And I think our like the minute and smaller details of kind of how we enjoy worship and how we connect with God. And then in addition to that, kind of, you know, just typical like denominational differences, like I'll get out of a church service and I'll start talking about it right away, and she needs to process it, and then it becomes an argument, just like, well, church has for years with people, because maybe we've disagreed on like the smallest of things and we turn it into a bigger issue. And so we've learned if it's important to both of us to talk about our faith and talk about how we process our relationship with Jesus, then we have to be very wise in how we do it so that it is a fun conversation and not one that the church has struggled with for years, which becomes contentious and ugly.
Yeah, that can be a big challenge. It's definitely good that you guys are aware of that now, because mm-hmm. I think when it comes to stuff like that, there's an expectation of not having a fight about something that's perceived as a really good thing. Mm-hmm. And then you do, and then you have the added pressure of being like, well, if we're fighting about this, this must be a big problem. And then it becomes, then you want to force your perspective on the other person, and then you added so much pressure. So that can be really tough. You know, when things, especially religion, it's like, it's such a challenge when your beliefs are pretty closely aligned. But then there's some different, like that's actually harder than when people are on two opposite ends of the spectrum, because you're aware of those differences and you're like, you understand them. But sometimes there's a built-in expectation of, well, I thought we thought exactly the same thing. And when you don't, that can be a challenge. It can be disappointing. So it's good that you guys know that.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of our relationship has been working from a distance. And so communication has been key. Like we haven't been ever in the same city living together. So, you know, a lot of our time is spent on the phone and conversing about our needs and desires and our wants and figuring out how that looks. And, I would never do it any other way, cause it's helped us get to this point, but it has needed transparent, clear conversations about some really tough things to get us to a point now where I can confidently look her in the eyes and say, hey, we've been stuck in a house together for 2 weeks and I'm having a blast. Like, it's been great.
What are some things? I mean, we get a lot of people asking about long distance relationships. And usually I tell people like the only way to get through a long distance relationship is to try to make it not one over time. But as you've just said, you've met a woman, fallen in love with a woman, and got engaged to a woman all via long distance. And eventually, obviously, she's going to move, as you said, but you've been able to create this love and this engagement all based off a distance. What's some things that have worked for you guys, and what are some struggles that you guys have had to overcome?
You know, my best piece of advice is one that I think most people like get confused by when I say it, is we've never communicated our sadness, not in terms of life or not in terms of like variables outside of our relationship, but when we leave each other or when we're missing each other, we have chosen not to communicate that unless it's in a healthy, uplifting way. Because if every time I dropped Jessica off at the airport and I was like, I'm so sad, or she was like, I'm so sad, and we, or maybe like 3 days before she even leaves, we start saying, it's going to be so sad when you leave. It's going to just like carry this heaviness over our relationship that's no fun. And we knew that we're going to have to be apart. Like, that's, we're not stopping that. That's part of our lives. It's part of the commitment we're making. And it's what you get for dating me, and it's what I get for dating Jessica. So that was one thing. And it's helped us a ton because our communication is typically positive and uplifting. The second is we've never left each other without having a plan on when to see each other again. So I always know that when I drop her off at the airport or when I say goodbye to her, I always know the next time I'm seeing her. And she knows the same thing. That's helped us a ridiculous amount. Even more than like communication during the day or any of that, those two variables have helped us stay very healthy, happy, and confident in our relationship, because there has been very little left unsaid. Because we've wanted to talk to each other, and we want to see each other, and we know when we see each other again.
That's fantastic advice. I can see why that can have an impact, and it's really smart of you guys. I didn't not think of that, Ben. So thanks for sharing that. I think a lot of people in the audience will appreciate. Before we let you go,
can I ask one question before we play?
Yeah.
I just really want to hear about the tour, because it sounds insane to me, like sleeping on that bus. And I heard there's like, I don't know, like I couldn't do it. I don't think, being around people all the time. And like, what's it been like?
Rochelle, it was wild. We're going to get back in January, it seems like, with our next dates. You know, when Nick kind of said it earlier, when I was first asked, there's very little that I knew about it.
Yeah.
So here is an overview of what it was. It had its moments of being really hard. You're on a tour bus traveling down a road, sometimes for 15 hours at a time, and you're in a little bedroom in the back. And like, I had it lucky. Like, my bedroom was pretty nice. People are staying in bunks. Then you pull up to a theater, and you get to use everything a theater offers, theaters that are like hundreds of years old sometimes. Yeah. And all of them are beautiful, but not a lot of them are very nice,
right,
per se. You're around, you know, we had 2,500 people pretty much a night at these shows, huge audiences that love Bachelor Nation. But it's tiring. I mean, you aren't getting a lot of sleep. Dinner typically was served at like 11 o'clock at night after the show, because you don't really have time to eat beforehand. So you're eating and drinking at like 11 o'clock, going to bed at 1. And then I still work. Like, I was still doing Generous. And so I had meetings at 8 that I'd have to be up and ready for.
Yeah.
But overall, it was an incredibly unique experience. Is it what I want to be doing in 10 years? I don't know. But for the time being, it was really fun, really crazy, unlike anything I expected. And Bachelor Nation is everywhere. That's the biggest takeaway, is like Cheyenne, Wyoming, great following. Yeah. Kennewick, Washington, great crowd. And that part was cool, to see people from all over. We were doing it for about a month and a half when it stopped, and it's been kind of nice taking a break, and then we'll get back and going again, and I'll be refreshed and ready to go.
You like working with Becca?
I do a lot. Yeah, she's really good. She's really talented. It took us some time, not like we had issues with each other, but it took us some time to feel out how to co-host together. Again, Nick, if you go back to the envy, my ego would get in the way, and hey, Becca, that should be my joke, or hey, Becca, like, this is my moment to talk, and I would have those feelings, and then I just realized that it was so transparent to see, and it was really hurting our ability to have any type of cohesiveness on stage. It's wild. Once I gave that up, And I told her, hey, I'm giving this up. Like, you've probably seen it and felt it. Like, I'm releasing this. Like, I want to just see us do well together. How good we became together. Like, once I gave up my envy and my ego, how much better we became as a team. I don't know. That could be the lesson learned here, but that took me a bit.
Yeah.
And now I feel like we've done really well.
That's awesome. Well, before we let you go, we are going to play a little game called Do You Know Me? It's real simple, Ben. I'm going to ask you some questions. Rochelle selected these questions. Probably, it seems like based off the idea that maybe Ben is or is not perfect. I don't know if that was a theme in Rochelle's selecting of these questions. But it's real simple, Ben. I'm going to ask these questions. Don't answer it right away. Rochelle and I are going to guess the answer to these questions, and then you will reveal who knows you the best. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Do You Know Me? With Benjamin Higgins. Question number one. Has Ben ever peed in a bottle? Has Ben Higgins ever peed in a bottle?
I don't know why. I could say yes.
I know Ben has a very small bladder.
Why? Why do you know that?
Something else. I was going to say something else. I was like, dang it, Nick. Not now.
Yeah, his cock won't fit in a bottle. So it's impossible.
Stop.
No, like on Caitlin's season, he had to pee all the time, constantly.
Oh, really?
Yes.
High maintenance, Ben.
I can tell you why. There's a reason for that. But
what is it? You were staying hydrated?
Yeah.
No, so I have like a little bit of social anxiety. And so when I taught myself as a kid that when I start feeling anxious or unhealthy, the quickest escape was to go to the bathroom to like splash water in my face and like take a deep breath. So I just had to use the restroom. Like, honestly, I try to drink a lot of water. But it is my escape. Like, a 5-minute bathroom break and quiet and like peacefulness is like what I can do to get back and be a better version of myself. So yes. And have I peed in a bottle? Of course. So, a lot of long road trips. Yeah. Many times.
He's not too good for that. I always go to the bathroom at parties. I'm like, I feel awkward. I'll just go to the bathroom. And then I'm like,
yeah,
okay. Definitely. I definitely use the bathroom to just get away from people.
Yeah.
Question number two. Has Ben ever failed a class? I'm going to say no. He's never gotten an F on a class.
I think he has. Something happened and he couldn't do it. Like, something happened in his life and he failed. They had to retake it.
He might have dropped a class in college, but he's never failed.
Dropped it counts as failing.
Okay.
Not if you drop it, like, in the first month or something. You'd be like, I don't like this class and I'm going to change it.
I'm counting it.
I have never failed, but I have dropped.
Okay.
So I don't know how you're taking that, but I've dropped classes. One in class was called Earthquakes and Volcanoes. I thought it was going to be a fun elective. It was so hard. Yeah. I'll never forget it.
I thought geology was going to be rocks for jocks.
Yeah.
It was like the hardest class I've ever taken.
And I had to drop it. I couldn't do it.
But yeah. Okay.
The 5-year-old in was like, yeah, this class is awesome.
Blow shit up.
Volcanoes.
No. Not at all.
All right. Question number three. Has Ben Higgins ever gone to class intoxicated, whether being high, under the influence of any kind? I'm going to say yes.
I will say.
In college, if you had a beer before, but you felt you showed up for class and you're just like, whew, wow.
I don't think Nick fucked up. I mean, I don't think Ben smokes, so I'm saying no.
I don't think it. Well, yeah, but I'm expanding to like influence of any kind.
Yeah. So 100% I have, and I have a good story for this. Indiana University has a week called Little 500. It's a big party week there. And one of the cool things to do was to day drink. And I thought it was more responsible for me to day drink and go to class than to day drink and not go to class. And so I'll never forget this. I had a class that I honestly, and this is not an exaggeration, I don't know if you guys have this, but I still have reoccurring dreams every once in a while of this moment in my life. Where like you've missed a test or you've missed a class and like you wake up in the middle of the night panicked. Well, mine was, I went to class, must have been a lot like more intoxicated than I expected. I woke up from the professor waking me up at the end of class with my head on my desk. So I had been not something I'm proud of, but I had woken up at the end of it. And he says, you should not come to class in this state. Now, was I the only one doing this? No, this is a campus-wide event. But I still have a reoccurring dream of the guilt and shame that I felt from waking up being like, yeah, man, I'm sorry, like, not smart.
I have a reoccurring dream similar. There's different variations, but it all is around the idea that I find myself in a situation I'm not prepared for. Like, I've had it where it's just, I'm back in high school or I'm back in college, and I have this class that's like, it's like the last week of class, and I haven't showed up for any class, and I've like become fully aware that like I'm gonna like fail this class, and I've never showed up for. Or like when I used to play sports or track, like I have the biggest meet and I haven't worked out. Like, I'm in the shape I am now,
that's
but
how
like
I feel.
At the starting line of a race or something, and it's like this recurring dream I'll have from time to time, and it gives me great anxiety. So.
Yeah, no, it happens to me all the time.
Question number 4. Does Ben sleep with a stuffed animal? No.
I think maybe... Wait, do you sleep in the same bed as Jess, or are you guys separate beds till you're married?
Separate.
Whoa!
Even when she visits you?
Sometimes we do. Like, I mean, the tour bus is hard too. So like, yeah... I mean,
no, but when she comes to Colorado.
Like right now,
oh, no.
Are you?
Yeah, right now we are. But like if she comes
to Colorado. Yeah, you're out of Paris.
Yeah. So like there's like, it's like a respect level and also just like how, like what the logistics of it is.
Huh. Sure. I think she has a stuffed animal. I'm just going to say that.
She might, but I don't think Ben does.
Yeah, but if he's sleeping in the same bed as her, then there's a stuffed animal. What's the answer?
No, not even close. Never have. My closest thing is a body pillow.
I put a pillow between my legs. Last question, Ben. I don't know. Has Ben had sex in the past week in his full house of his soon to be parents-in-laws and brothers-in-laws? Have you and Jess been fornicating?
But I don't think they are at all. Right?
Yeah, you're right, Michelle.
Sneak one in.
No.
No, but are you guys like waiting till you get married?
Yeah, you're right. That's so like definitely not this week and not in the last like year and a half.
Yeah. Woo! Did I win? I don't know, probably not.
You won that one, but not the game.
Oh. Right, we'll let you go.
All right,
Ben.
I really appreciate you taking the time. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I always enjoy conversations with you, and really appreciate you being open. And you know, the takeaway obviously is you know, envy and jealousy, and it's a funny thing that we feel. Everyone experiences it, and it's always a good reminder not to judge yourself for having it, but also just be cognizant that when you have those feelings in that moment, that there's a good chance you're not alone. So you should probably just stop if you can.
You're right, man. Well, hey, I love you. Rochelle, nice to meet you. Thanks for doing this. Thanks for chatting today, and let's do it again. This is fun.
All right. Congrats. Tell Jess I said hi, and I'll talk to you soon, buddy.
All right. See you guys.
And thanks for listening, guys. And don't forget to send in your questions at asknick@castmedia.com for our Ask Nick episodes on Monday. And if you haven't heard them yet, be sure to check them out. We always appreciate you guys listening, and we will see you guys next time.